Savior. I have, I've been fortunate to get to teach some of these lessons, but I just want to say I have really enjoyed this series and what other people have shared as well. And tonight our topic is Jesus, Lord of the Sabbath. Now, as I've always been willing to do, if you want these notes, I'm happy to share them with you. There's my email address. If you want to email me, I'll be happy to share them with you. But I do know that Neil Farley is kind of gathering all these notes together. So if you can't wait for Neil to get that done and you've got to have it by tomorrow, go ahead and email me. If you can wait a little bit, Neil will get it all there. He's getting them all together in one place. But there it is, just in case. All right. So here we go. Let's jump into the Bible. All right. So we're going to start in Luke chapter 6. In verses 1 through 5, it says, "One day on a Sabbath, as Jesus was going through a field, his disciples were picking heads of grain, rubbing them in their hands, and eating them. Some of the Pharisees said, 'Why are you doing something that is unlawful on the Sabbath?' Answering them, Jesus said, 'Have you never read about what David did when he and those with him were hungry? He went into the house of God, took the sacred bread, and ate it, and gave it to those with him. Did he not eat what was lawful only for the priest to eat?' Then he said to them, 'The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath.'" Okay, so this is where we get our title for tonight, Jesus, who's on. We talked 1 week about what it means that Jesus is the Son of Man. Do you remember what it means? Okay. Well, in case you've forgotten, it means that God gave him all authority and all power. There's a little more to it than that. He gave him a few other things too. But now Jesus is saying, "I, the Son of Man, who's been given all authority and all power, I am Lord of the Sabbath." And so tonight we want to talk about what does that mean, Lord of the Sabbath? Okay, so let's look at our story. What's happened here? Okay, so the disciples are walking through the fields. They're picking heads of grain as they walk through the field. They're rubbing it in their hands and they're eating it. The Pharisees see this and they say in the Greek, "Ouk exestin," which means exestin means law is permissible or lawful, and ouk means not. So what they say, what you're doing is not lawful. It's not permissible to do on the Sabbath. Okay? Why? We're going to talk about that. What were they doing that was so wrong? But I do want to make note of this, that Jesus is not mentioned doing this, only the disciples. But Jesus defends his disciples and their right to pick grain, rub it in their hands, and eat it. Okay? You guys ready? So, what are they doing that's so bad? They violate Sabbath regulations. At the time, these regulations, okay, it was the, you remember the Old Testament tells them, don't work on the Sabbath. Okay, it doesn't define work all that much compared to what is expected here in Jesus' time. Okay, so these became a big body of traditions, oral traditions that were handed down from generation to generation. Eventually, these oral traditions are written down in something called the Mishnah. But the Mishnah is actually not written until late second, early third century AD. So, I mean, right now in Jesus' time, it's just oral tradition. It doesn't actually get written down to like 200 years afterwards. And in this tradition, there were 39 categories of work that were not permitted by the law. Now, the Old Testament doesn't spell out these 39, okay? It just says, don't work on the Sabbath, basically. And it doesn't say what I'm about to show you. Here are the 39 malakot, things that you are not supposed to do on the Sabbath according to the tradition. Okay? You can't carry or burn or extinguish. So if something's on fire, I guess you're not supposed to put it out. Can't strike with a hammer on the Sabbath. You can't write, you can't erase. The kids probably love that, no homework on the Sabbath. Cooking, washing, sewing, tearing, knotting, untying. So you couldn't tie it and you couldn't untie it on the Sabbath, right? No shaping, no plowing, no planting, reaping, harvesting, threshing, winnowing, selecting, sifting. No grinding, kneading, combing, spinning, dyeing, no chain stitching. No warping or weaving or unraveling or building or demolishing. You couldn't build it, you couldn't tear it down. No trapping, shearing, slaughtering, skinning, tanning, smoothing, marking. 39 things you could not do on the Sabbath. That's a lot of stuff. I'm winded just reading it, okay? So what were the disciples doing? Which of those commands were they breaking? The work they were doing, okay, let me go back, get the numbers here, were 16 and 18. They were reaping and threshing, at least according to the Pharisees. So what were they doing? They were reaching out and plucking a head of grain. That's reaping. And then they were rubbing it in their hands so that they could get, you know, the grain, you have to separate the edible part from the inedible part. And so that's what they were doing when they rubbed it in their hands. That's threshing. Now, in reality, that's only by the very strictest definition of work. Could anyone say that what the disciples were doing was actually work? Walking through the field itself was probably more labor, more effort than doing this. Okay? And so what they were doing, was it really work? Not really, but to the Pharisees it was. And even the guys that wrote the Mishnah seemed to understand this, right? 200 years later. Here's a quote from the Mishnah. Now, that word, if you see the C-H-A-G word, I had to watch a YouTube video so that I knew how to pronounce it. But here you go, okay? Chajaga 1:8 says this. The rules about the Sabbath are as mountains hanging by a hair. For scripture is scanty and the rules many. So even the guys that put the Mishnah together recognize that they had built up all of this stuff around something that there's not a whole lot of scriptural support to. Don't work on the Sabbath. And so they had built up this big body of laws and regulations. They didn't have a whole lot of scriptural support for it. But still, the Pharisees are demanding, these guys shouldn't work on the Sabbath. It's not permissible. Okay. So over time, these unwritten rules have become very far from what God had really actually intended the Sabbath to be. What was the Sabbath supposed to be? It's a day of rest, a day of worship. So Sabbath keeping is important. People should have that. But it should be guided by common sense, not a big mountain of new rules. So these rules have become so nonsensical that it was keeping the Sabbath from actually being what God had intended it for it to be. It was had become this big burden for people. It was supposed to be a day of worship and rest. It was supposed to be beneficial. But the rules had become so weighty and so heavy that it had become a big old back-breaking load. People couldn't keep the Sabbath according to this body of laws that had been built up over time. Now, I have this note here for just something for you to think about. It must have been exhausting to be a Pharisee on the Sabbath. Because not only did you have to make sure you keep all the rules, but you felt an obligation to make sure everybody else did too. Okay. And really that's what this was about rule keeping. Okay. And, you know, Jesus was not about rule keeping. Jesus is about relationship. Jesus, you know, had come really not to make sure everybody obeyed all the rules, but to set people free. And so this Sabbath had become such a burden that Jesus now, as Lord of the Sabbath, really is going to try to set people free to really observe the Sabbath the way it should be observed. Okay. So Jesus here is defending his disciples. And to do it, he goes to the Bible. All right? He goes to 1 Samuel 21, verses 1 through 6. Now, I'm not going to take the time to read this story. Okay? You want to look at it. You're probably familiar with the story, but David is on, like he often is early on, is on the run from Saul, and he stops at the temple And he and his men are hungry, and so they take the bread that was meant for the priest and they eat it. Okay. So think about this. Who's a better example for him to use than one of Judaism's great heroes? Who's better than David? I mean, if you were to make a Mount Rushmore of Old Testament heroes, David would probably be on it. I mean, he was one of the great heroes for the Jews and the Pharisees. But so he uses this example when they go to the temple and eat the sacred bread. Jesus makes the point that the Sabbath is like the bread. It's supposed to be for people's benefit rather than a giant burden that people aren't able to carry. Luke doesn't really record this statement, but Mark 2, in the parallel passage, you can see the verse there, 2:27. Mark records Jesus saying this: "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath." Jesus makes this point that the Sabbath had been created for people, not the other way around. It's supposed to be something beneficial, not a burden. Okay? And that's important. Jesus fights for our freedom here, fights for the freedom of his disciples, the freedom to eat when they need to eat. You know, and he's making this case for them. He's fighting for them. All right. So same scripture we just looked at, and I just highlighted verse 5. Then he said to them, "The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." So Jesus, again, Son of Man, reminder, this is what that means. He's the one with all the authority. He's the one with all the power. He says, "I am Lord of the Sabbath." What does that mean? That means it's not the place of the Pharisees to tell God what is permissible to do on the Sabbath. They don't get to make the rules. Jesus gets to make the rules. He's the one who's in charge of the Sabbath. And God had made the Sabbath. So Jesus, in saying this, is challenging some of their ideas. Like this: was the law meant to be interpreted so literally that it does away with compassion? Can you not feed a hungry person on the Sabbath? Can you, I mean, if you're starving, can you not eat on the Sabbath? Should we be compassionate even on the Sabbath? Do the ceremonial restrictions of the law give way to human need? And Jesus indicates here, yes, it does. Now, here's another little note. The scriptures don't seem to condemn David at all for his actions, nor does the priest who was there. David is not condemned in any way. And so in order to condemn Jesus and the disciples here, the Pharisees would have to condemn David for his actions. And they're not willing to do that. So Jesus, as he always does, outsmarts the Pharisees by using the scriptures to show them the truth. They just don't really want to listen to it. Okay. So here's some things we can learn from this story. First, Jesus has the power to declare the purpose and standards of God's command. Okay? He's the Son of Man. He's the Lord of the Sabbath. He can say, "This is what that's about. This is what that's for. You need to listen to me." Second, God's commands have a good purpose. Okay, all of them, not just the Sabbath. The Sabbath has a really good purpose. Okay, and so whatever command we're talking about, God has our best interests at heart. God's commands have a good purpose. And the best way to understand those purposes, whatever those commands and the purposes of those commands, is by listening to Jesus. Okay, in their attempts to be righteous, the Pharisees had created stumbling blocks for people. Their intentions were good, but the result was actually pretty far from what God had intended. And Jesus, what was he doing here? He's trying to correct this. He's trying to bring a better way for people to come to God. And we're not going to go back and look at it, but in the previous chapter, Jesus talks about the old wineskins and the new wineskins. For those of you know who of you who want to study this a little more, it's worth taking a look at those verses, Luke 5, 37 to 39. But I think most of you are probably familiar with Jesus talking about the wineskins. Okay. Jesus is talking about something completely different and separate from the Pharisees' way of doing things. This legalistic Judaism that the Pharisees and the teachers of the law practiced. Jesus was trying to bring a new spirit, a new form, a new approach to everything. And the Pharisees and the teachers of the law reject Jesus's new paradigm completely because they're so wedded to the old wineskin. And Jesus then in chapter 5 is saying that old wineskin and that new wineskin are incompatible. You can't have them both at the same time. Jesus in here is he's trying to bring freedom. And this new wineskin that Jesus had been talking about is not a new legalism. Okay. He wants to get rid of the old legalism. He's not trying to bring in a new legalism. He's trying to bring in freedom. Freedom to really walk with God. Freedom to have, to be faithful and not always question your salvation. Okay. I'm probably not the only one who's been there. Okay. Freedom to really follow Jesus and have a life that is joyous and not burdensome. And so Jesus wants to bring set us free. That's what I think Lord of the Sabbath is about. He wants to set us free. Now we still need to live righteously, but we want to do that without all the trappings that come along with legalism. All right, you guys still with me? All right. So we're going to read on. We're going to continue the story right there in Luke 6, okay? Because another story happens and it just happens to be the Sabbath. Here you go, verse 6. On a different Sabbath, Jesus went into the synagogue to teach. There was a man there whose hand was withered. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law were watching him closely to see if he would heal the man on the Sabbath, because they were looking for an opportunity to accuse him. But Jesus knew what they were thinking and said to the man with the withered hand, "Get up and stand here in the middle of everyone." So the man stood up. Then Jesus said to them, "I ask you, what is the lawful thing to do on the Sabbath? Good or evil? To save a life or destroy one?" Then, looking around at all of them, Jesus said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He did so, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees completely lost their minds with rage and began to discuss with one another what they might do about Jesus. All right. So Jesus now has come to the synagogue to teach. And it just happens to be the Sabbath. And there's a man there with a withered hand. The Pharisees are waiting and watching Jesus intently to see if he would heal the man on the Sabbath. The Greek word here is Heterunto, which means to watch closely. They were watching him intently, hoping he would mess up. They were hoping he would heal this guy just so they could accuse him of working on the Sabbath. Okay, they had been looking for any way to accuse Jesus of something and make it stick. So here were the rules, okay, about medical work on the Sabbath. Was considered a violation of the Sabbath to do any medical work except in a few cases. If a life was in danger, if a baby was being born, or if a circumcision was being performed, those three things you could do on the Sabbath. Okay. And those are the good things. I mean, finally, at least, there's a little bit of common sense being applied here. Okay. Could you imagine telling a woman who's just gone into labor, "Hey, wait, it's a Sabbath. You got to wait until tomorrow." Okay. That doesn't work. Okay, that is not going to work. And so at least a little bit of common sense has been applied here, right? So if a baby's being born, if a life is in danger, if a circumcisions were being performed, then you could do medical work on the Sabbath. Well, none of those applied here. This man, he had a withered hand, but his life was not in danger. And so in the mind of the Pharisees, he needed to wait till tomorrow. To us and to Jesus, their reasoning made no sense. And Jesus exposes it for what it is: foolishness, silliness. Okay? Jesus knows what they're thinking. He knows they're watching him, trying to get him to, to do something. So here's what he does. He doesn't heal the man quietly. He brings the man right out of the middle of everyone to heal him. He's not being subtle here. He's not, kind of doing it low key. He brings him right out in the middle. The Pharisees looking for a reason to accuse him, but the way Jesus does this, the way he heals the man, in his use of just plain, ordinary common sense, shuts them down. You ready? All right. So the first thing he does before he heals the man is he says, "What is lawful?" Now, the interesting thing is he uses the same word that the Pharisees in the previous story had used, "existent," right? Remember how they'd said, "Uk existent, that's not permissible." Now he asks them, "What is permissible to do on the Sabbath?" Okay. Now, I don't know if they were the same Pharisees or not. Who knows? Okay. I don't know. But it may have been the same guys that he's saying, "Well, you said that wasn't lawful. Well, what is lawful to do on the Sabbath? Is it lawful to do good or evil? To give life or to destroy life?" Common sense tells you that doing good is acceptable. The saving of life is acceptable. To heal this man may not have saved his life, but it certainly was good. He would be doing good and not evil to this man. So Jesus essentially saying, here's a little paraphrase here. Jesus is essentially saying, why should I delay healing this man when I can do it right now? So the Pharisees, I mean, the answer is so obvious that the Pharisees have a bit of a dilemma. Would they rather this man continue in his suffering rather than be healed on the Sabbath? Does that make any sense to you? It doesn't make any sense to me either. So why would it please God to make this man wait a day? It wouldn't. That doesn't make any sense. So Jesus heals him. All right. They're so desperate that to accuse Jesus of something. They want to accuse him of working on the Sabbath. But let me ask you this. What work does Jesus actually do to heal this man? None. He says one sentence and the man is healed. He says, "Stretch out your hand." Is that working? How could that possibly be considered work? Which of the 30, even in their own rules, Jesus hasn't worked? Which of the 39 classifications of work has he broken here? Not a one. And so Jesus effectively deals with their objections before they can even make them. Okay, do you see that? You see how smart Jesus is? How clever he is? He publicly displays his power and authority on the Sabbath and then leaves it to his opponents to respond. And respond they do. The Greek word that Luke uses here to describe their anger, the anger that they have after he heals the man is annoias. Now, in looking at this a little bit, the Exegetical Guide to the Greek by a guy named Alan Thompson explains the word like this. Use these three phrases. And I love this. One of them is mindless rage. Another one is without understanding. And the other one that Thompson uses is such an extreme anger as to suggest the incapacity to use one's mind. So what you saw a few slides ago was my own translation from the Greek, and I translated it like this. The Pharisees completely lose their minds with rage. Okay. That's what that word implies. They just go berserk. Okay. Because they're so angry and there's not a thing they can do about it. They can't charge Jesus with working on the Sabbath like they want to because all he did was speak. Jesus has defeated them logically in words, physically in actions. They are completely confounded by Jesus again. So in their anger, now the Pharisees start talking about what they can do about Jesus. All right. So we're going to go back to that whole, even though we're not looking at it, okay, hopefully you're familiar enough to know what I'm talking about here. We're going to talk about that whole old wineskin, new wineskin thing again for just a minute. Because see, the Pharisees, what's their problem? Okay. They don't get it. And it seems like if there's a way to see it incorrectly, they've figured that out. Okay. They've become so wedded to the old wineskin that they're unable to see that Jesus in his new wineskin is a much better way of doing things. They're married to this old wineskin of legalism, this idea that I can do well enough to earn it. As I said before, they're rule keepers. Okay. Some of us are rule keepers. We like rules. Rules make things easy. Tell me what I got to do, I do it. Okay. I've been that way. You maybe too. Okay. But that was the old wineskin. I can earn it. The new wineskin, Jesus, the wineskin that Jesus is bringing is the wineskin of grace and freedom. And it's this idea of I don't deserve it, I can't earn it, but I can have it anyway. Jesus is fighting for freedom. He fought for his disciples. He's fighting for the man with the withered hand. He'll fight for us. He's fighting for freedom from this legalistic form of religion that all of his critics embraced. And that fight was not just for the people that were there watching this. It was for us as well. Okay. So here you go. I'm borrowing a page from Mr. Phil Garrison. If you saw his lesson, his sermon about a week and a half ago, these tell stories, right? So here that these are two pictures of me. I'll leave it to you to figure out which one is me in the pictures, right? No, I think it's probably pretty obvious. In this one, in the first one, that's me on the bicycle. I'm about 5 years old. My dad is behind me. We're living in New Mexico because that's where dad was stationed in the Air Force. He's wearing his Air Force dress shoes right now. And I'm not sure, but I think this might be that moment when dad has let go and I am riding that bicycle for the first time. Okay. And I want you to notice what I'm wearing. I'm wearing my cowboy boots. Okay. When I was five, all I wanted to be was a cowboy. Now, there's a part of me that still wants to be a cowboy, but certainly at that age, that was all I wanted to be, was a cowboy. I'm riding my bicycle in my cowboy boots. Okay. And the other picture, I'm a little older. And that's my sister in the blue dress. Okay. And she looks like she's having a pretty good time riding on the back of a giant turtle. I, if you can't tell, am sort of squatting awkwardly on the back of another giant turtle. Okay. It looks like I've kind of forgotten how to comb my hair, and I'm wearing clothes that I can't imagine that I would have picked out for myself. And I'm wearing these glasses that kind of make me look like a frog looking up through 2 inches of ice. Okay. What I want you to see is this, okay? Look at my face, okay? Blowing it up here, okay? Who do you think I'd rather be? All right? Look at Bicycle Boy here, right? I'm happy, I'm wild, I'm free, I'm confident. I'm riding my bicycle in my cowboy boots, okay? Look at the other picture. I don't know, kind of dazed and confused. Saying, what in the world am I doing on the back of a giant turtle squatting awkwardly? Okay. So, my question is, who do you think I'd rather be? Okay. Who would you rather be? I think the answer is obvious. I'd much rather be riding my bicycle on in my cowboy boots, boy, right? Than squatting awkwardly on a giant turtle boy. Wouldn't you? Okay. Because in one, I'm happy, and the other one, I'm kind of saying, what am I doing here? Okay. Now I share all that with you to say this. This is kind of, describe some of my spiritual life. Sometimes in my own walk with God, I'm happy. I'm wild. I'm free. I'm riding my bicycle in my cowboy boots. I'm loving it. I'm doing great. I'm walking with God, and it's awesome. And then sometimes I've been confused riding on the back of a giant turtle boy, okay, going, I'm not happy. I'm burdened. How did I get here? What am I doing? Okay. My guess is I'm not the only one who's experienced both of these. Okay. So here's what I want you to think about. John 8:31 says this. Jesus says this. If you hold to my teachings, you are really my disciples. And then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. There have been times in my life where I've actually kind of said this out loud when I read that scripture. If I know the truth and I'm obeying it, why don't I feel free? Okay. Am I alone here? Am I the only one who's felt that? My guess is probably not. Okay. I didn't feel free. I felt burdened. And I think sometimes, legalism is actually pretty easy to get into. I think we as human beings have it, we sort of, I know I do, sort of tend toward it because legalism is actually pretty easy compared to really having a relationship with God and really checking our hearts and really trusting Him when things are difficult and really trusting His grace. If you can tell me, all right, Tom, do A, B, and C, and don't do D, E, and F, and you say that, and I go, oh, I can do that. But what happens when I don't do E, or when I don't do C and I do F? Am I lost? I just kind of walk that legalistic tightrope, and it makes us miserable. And I think when I've asked myself questions like that, if I know the truth and I'm obeying it, why don't I feel free? It's because my vision, I'm looking at something through the wrong lens. I'm not looking at myself, or I'm not looking at God through the lens of grace and freedom. And Jesus didn't come so that we would be burdened. He wasn't the Lord of the Sabbath, so that we could invent our own legalism. He came and he died on the cross so that we would be free. Jesus would rather we be riding the bicycle in my cowboy boots, boy, right? The happy one, the confident one, the free one. Okay. A couple scriptures from Galatians. Now, if you've never really studied out the book of Galatians, it helped me immensely a few years ago to really study it and understand. Early in Galatians, Paul talks about basically two gospels. Okay. And one is not a very good gospel. The two gospels are the gospel of grace, the one he had taught them, and the other one's basically the gospel of legalistic righteousness. Okay. He said, don't let somebody, verse 8, he says, it says, if anyone preaches a gospel other than the one we preach to you, let him be accursed, right? You probably read that, probably familiar with that, right? And so he's talking about these two different gospels, and he spends a lot of time in Galatians differentiating the two. And in Galatians 2:21, he says, I do not set aside the grace of God, for if righteousness could be gained through the law, Christ died for nothing. If there's some way we can earn it, which is what the Pharisees and all their rule keeping thought they were doing, then Jesus died for nothing. Okay. So we've got to make sure that we're buying into this whole law of, or not law, this whole grace that Jesus is giving us and all of the freedom that he wants to give us. Because if we're just rule keepers, it's going to be burdensome for us. And Jesus died for nothing. Okay, here's another verse in Galatians. It is for freedom that Christ has set you free. Stand firm then and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. Well, slavery to what? I don't think he's, personally, this is my opinion, I don't think he's talking about slavery to sin. I think he's talking about the slavery of legalistic righteousness. Jesus didn't die on the cross so that we would follow him and be miserable. Again, I've done that. I've been there. And I know that I was looking at things the wrong way. And I, Jesus wants us to be free. He died on the cross so that we'd be free, not burdened. Let's choose blessing over burden. Let's choose grace over rule keeping. I think that's a better way to go. That's the better gospel. Galatians 5:13, because I do want us to understand, okay? And Paul understood that too, because our tendency is go, okay, I'm free. I can do whatever I want. That's awesome. Paul, like just a few verses later, says, don't use your freedom to indulge yourself. Okay. I didn't set you free so that you can just go do whatever you wanted either. Okay. You're free to walk with me with, and to trust God for his protection and provision and to, well, to be free. All right. So here we go. Here's the good news. Jesus fought against the legalism of the Pharisees. Why? To establish for us freedom. That's why he's Lord of the Sabbath. That's why he's, you know, as the Son of Man declared himself Lord of the Sabbath, because they were misusing the Sabbath. They were missing the point. And again, if the Pharisees could miss the point, they probably did. Okay. If there was a point to miss, they probably missed it. And they certainly did on the Sabbath. We don't have to live a life weighed down by guilt because of our inability to measure up. Okay. Here's something that's helped me. Okay. You guys ready for this? In this regard, I accept the fact that I can't measure up. Okay. I tried and tried and tried to measure up for so long, and I just decided to accept it and to let God make up the difference. Because when Jesus died on the cross, we can live in God's grace. I can live in God's grace instead of being a rule keeper and trying to measure up all the time. Okay. So here are my takeaways. Okay. For tonight. First, Jesus has the power to determine the purpose of God's commands. And those commands have a good purpose. I think it's really important to remember that God's commands are not burdensome, right? Matthew talks about the easy yoke, right? They're not burdensome. They can be burdensome if we're not looking at them through the lens of God's grace and God's freedom. Second takeaway, rule keeping won't save us. Rule keeping, we like rule keeping, okay? Because, you know, oftentimes it's clear, just keep this rule, but it's not going to save us. Instead, Jesus, through God's grace, will save us. And finally, this is my takeaway. Following the Lord of the Sabbath should be a life of freedom, not a life of burden. That's what I have for you tonight, guys. Jesus, Lord of the Sabbath. I do invite you to come back Sunday. Okay. On Sunday, the Good Shepherd, Matt Rupert's going to teach us about the Good Shepherd in the Northeast, and John Novak is going to go to the Northwest and do it there. And then please come back next Wednesday for Dr. Toju Chikeobi as she talks about Jesus, the great physician. And that is your Bible.